hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell and Jeff Janey.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 37 of the No Better Than Average podcast. My name is Jeff Janey, and along with me tonight is Jacob Cazell. How are you doing, Jacob?
I am here in spirit and not in body. Or wait a minute, maybe that's the other way around.
Wait, what?
I'm here.
You're confusing me.
I'm confusing myself.
Well, I'm here in both body and spirit, and I guess both is just two, so I'll leave it at that. Hey, everybody, if you want to get a hold of us, please give us a phone call at 317-643-1212. We'd love to hear from you. It's been a couple weeks since we've heard from anybody, so give us a shout and let us know what's going on. You know, even if it's just, hey, you guys suck. I mean, we'll cry a lot if you do that, but give us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you guys.
Maybe that's why people aren't calling us, because all of the people who've wanted to call and say, hey, we like you guys, have done that, and the rest of the people are just like, we don't have anything to say. So since we don't have anything nice to say, we're not going to say anything at all.
Yeah, okay. That could be a thing.
It could be.
Fair enough. Well, there you go.
So just in one fell swoop made you feel worse.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, you've only got a couple of weeks left to get your show t-shirt. I know you want one, you need one. It will complete you as a person. And if you want to do that, it will get you an exclusive show shirt. It will give us a couple of bucks. It will be awesome all the way around. And you can go get that from our friend Nate, his company, the Imperial Shirt Company, at imperialshirtco.com. That would be awesome. Jeff and I have them coming for ourselves, and we've got a handful of you guys that have ordered them, and you will be looking spiffy. And you've only gotten until July 26th to get one ordered. So
yeah, it's not that much
TikTok
time left. That's right.
Only another couple of shows before they are gone forever. So hurry up and get that if you're interested. It'll make you look great. I swear. I promise. I promise.
And we're also going to go ahead and plug our Patreon site. We have a Patreon site, which is www.patreon.com/nobettershow. Patreon is Patreon. That's a place that you can go and support us. And actually, you can support lots of podcasts and musical artists and all kinds of stuff. It's actually a pretty neat site. The idea being that you pledge a dollar amount per episode that you say, you know what? I get so much enjoyment out of the show. I'm going to give these guys a dollar an episode, and we would really appreciate that. Our hope is, we have some goals out there. I mean, if we can get enough money, we might try to do a video podcast, although you might want to pay us extra money not to do a video podcast. We have some goals out there. We have some different rewards out there. We would really appreciate it if you threw us a bone or two. For the most being that a couple things. This isn't free for us to do, even though we love doing it, and we will continue to do it, just paying for it out of our pocket. It would be very cool to break even. And if we get higher than breaking even, you know, one of the things that Jacob and I have talked about that we would love to do is, you know, get some gadgets to do reviews. And when I say get some gadgets, I don't mean get some gadgets and then keep them. If you guys are sponsoring us and we can use that money, what we're going to plan on doing is we'll do reviews of products and then we'll give them away to our listeners. So, you know, keep that in mind. If we can get the dollars up, you know, maybe we could get an Apple Watch or, you know, some fun new and shiny gadget.
Yeah.
To give away. That would be awesome.
And speaking of a segue into giving something away, we are giving away a Misfit Shine activity tracker. And all you have to do is go to our Facebook page, find the comment on our wall, or find the post about the Misfit Shine activity tracker on our wall, and leave a comment. We will randomly select somebody, and we will do that drawing on July 31st. And give that away to one lucky listener. So you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/nobettershow. And that is out there free. We will not even sell your information to advertisers, because Facebook has all that information about you and they're already doing that. We will not use it in any nefarious way. We just want to give you stuff.
So Music playlist, guys. So here's the thing. I ended up just doing it on Apple Music, and I haven't talked to you about this, Jacob, but I think, do you still have a Spotify account?
No, I actually canceled mine and went back to Google.
Because I don't have a Spotify account either, and you cannot create a playlist to share on Spotify unless you have a Spotify paid account. So, ladies and gentlemen out there, if you happen to be a Spotify user and you want to do me a solid and create a playlist of these wonderful tunes, we'll put a post up on the blog with all the songs that ended up being on it. But until then, I created an Apple Music playlist, and it's out there. We'll put it in the show notes. I tweeted it. I put it on Facebook. And it's pretty cool. We ended up with 19 songs. And there were a couple people that their first choice wasn't available on Apple Music. And I kind of got in contact with them, and they gave me some alternatives that I happened to put on there. And then the wonderful selection of the Drum and Bugle Corps, while it is available on YouTube, not available on Apple Music. So I just took the song, which is actually a quality song, and put the original on.
Oh, there you go.
I figure that's good enough, right?
Yeah, and the Apple Music playlist stuff works really slick.
It's very nice. I am very impressed, and it was really pretty easy to put together. So it's actually, I listened to the whole thing today in its entirety.
Awesome.
And it actually listens pretty well. I mean, it's an eclectic group of music. honestly, I don't know if this is surprising or a relief or disappointing. Depends on your viewpoint, but there was not a single country song, which I thought was interesting.
Huh? Really? Not one?
No. So I thought that was interesting. I mean,
we'll have to remedy that on playlist 2.0.
You know, maybe we just don't have that demographic of the country music fans that listen to our show, but there's some good quality music on there. I was really happy with the way that turned out. So, segueing into one of the people that contributed to that song playlist, contributed a Van Morrison song, I believe. Threw something at me that I thought was actually somewhat interesting. And that was, instead of having a playlist of your one favorite song, how about a playlist with what you think is the worst song ever?
Which is so subjective, because like what I hate, other people probably love.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, this could be very interesting, because it could end up being a playlist that is still pretty interesting, because just because I hate a song doesn't mean everyone hates a song. And just because you hate a song doesn't mean I'm going to hate a song. So you know what? I think this might just be interesting. So what the heck? Let's do it. So
what's your worst song, Jeff?
So my worst song, and I actually, when we started talking about this, Jacob and I actually picked the same frickin' worst song, which I think is hilarious.
Well, I think it proves that it's not that other people like it. It's just a bad song.
Yeah. But I ended up making you pick a different one. So my worst song ever is Tiptoe Through the Tulips by Tiny Tim. Boom. Drop the mic. Walk away. Now, one thing
bad.
I will say, I think a caveat we should put on the whole music thing this time is, let's try to make it at least songs that people that I can find. I mean, there are probably horrible, horrible songs out there that you've heard and maybe even have a track of that's your cousin's nephew's garage band that was the worst decision ever made in the entire universe. Let's try to make it at least be,
yeah, like the worst popular song or known song.
You know, a song that is fairly known and or is at least available for me to find on Apple Music, because I would like to just make sure I actually can put this in again in a playlist and save the proof positive no better than or much, much worse than average playlist, I guess. I don't know what we'll call it. We'll call it something. But
So I have two songs, because I am a scofflaw, as we have established. And
okay, I'm going to put my foot down.
Put your
and
foot
say,
down.
No, do not. Do not list Dang. Two songs here.
Okay.
Pick one or the
I got to go
other.
With the one. The one. Okay. I will say this, though. Both songs are on my list for the same reason, although they couldn't possibly be more different as far as songs go. And I'll leave that as something to just worm into your brain, because I'm only going to tell you the one.
The two, my preference would be for you to pick the first of the two songs
yes,
you have.
Yes, and that's
on the
one
notes.
That I am going to pick. Okay. So now there are going to be legions of listeners out there who are just dying to know what the second song is.
Well, I tell you what, if you donate $3 an episode on Patreon,
we'll tell you what that song is.
We'll let you know what it is.
Okay, so the story is, when I was in high school, when I was a wee lad in high school, I worked at a drugstore that I don't even think is around anymore. It was Osco Drug.
And your least favorite song is the Mozart used to come in and play while you were working, right?
Yes. So there was a Muzak system, and that Muzak system apparently was programmed by a sadist who loved like to play the same song over and over for weeks at a time. And I mean, it would play dozens of times during a shift. And for me, that song, and it's a good song. Like, I will give it to you. It's not a bad song, but every time I hear it, it sends me back to this time and this place where I was stuck on loop, and it is Dancing Queen by ABBA. And I just, every time I hear it, I'm all of a sudden, I'm 17 again, and I'm stocking shelves, and it's playing 15 times an hour, and I can't do it. I cannot do it. And that is my worst pop song ever. I can't listen to ABBA. Well, specifically Dancing Queen.
Yeah. So do the same thing that we asked of last time. You can send us an email at feedback@nobettershow. You can tweet us. You can Facebook us. You could call the comment line. You know, any of those options, just let us know what you think your least or your worst song ever. I think that's what we're calling it.
I like it. I like the idea. Come on. Give us your feedback, everybody. So I saw a really neat article today, Jeff, and I don't know if you saw this one or not, but forget about wearables, because here are coming hearables. Have you heard about this new product called Hear from Doppler Labs?
Hearables? I'm not even seeing it. Where did...
You got to scroll down in the show notes. Scroll down.
I'm scrolling, and I'm still not seeing it. Where did it go? No, I don't see it. Okay, but no, I didn't. Oh, there... No.
It should be on the bottom of the second page.
Bottom of the second page.
Or bottom of the third page.
I still am not seeing. Oh, there it is.
It's okay.
Got it. Found it.
We still go with it. Hearables. I'm guessing by the reaction, you did not read the article about the product called Hear.
No.
Okay, so there is a company called Doppler Labs, and they have got a new product called Hear, H-E-R-E, which, go figure, silly hipsters. They got to name something clever by purposely misspelling it. And what it is it is a little gizmo that you cram into your ears. It has a microphone, a speaker, and I guess they have developed a digital sound processor that has like so close to zero latency that it is scary. And it is designed to alter in real time the way that you hear the world. And so they are saying their stated goal is to enhance your live audio in three ways. And those three ways are volume control. So the microphones take the input from the outside, and you can attenuate or amplify as you choose. So you can tune out the outside world, or you can amp it up. They also are offering some equalizer effects. So an example that they gave on their little demo video is like, you're at a concert and the sound guy's drunk and there's just like way too much hi-hat in the mix. Well, you can actually pull up the app on your smartphone and you can dial that frequency down so that you are re-equalizing the world that you hear. They also are going to have some tools to target specific frequencies that they're calling anti-noises, so that you could dial in a baby crying anti-noise that will attempt to try and drown out the sound of baby crying or the subway. And then they're also offering real time, like nearly instantaneous effects. So like you could put like a flange on all the audio you hear. I don't know why you would want to do that, but you can, or you can put reverb on or delay. They've got like a distortion fuzz box or a bit crusher to mess with the world around you. I don't really get that one. The first two I kind of think are interesting.
I want real time translation.
Well, so that's got to be kind of like, you know, the 10-year down the road offshoot yeah. of something like this, right?
Sure.
So what they're trying to sell you, and it is not a live product yet. They say they're about 6 months from shipping. They have raised money on Kickstarter. They raised about $635,000, which was double their goal. And they've also, I guess, received $17 million in Series B funding. So they've got a lot of cash. They're saying that when Here is available, it's going to retail for about $250. So definitely sort of a niche novelty product. But it's going to be an interesting thing that, you know, certainly some people are going to play with and use. And I'm curious if, you know, will people walk around with these things stuck in their ears? Because obviously the prototypes are prototypes, but they're still pretty dang noticeable. It's not as subtle as like a hearing aid you might see. It's obvious you have something jammed into your ear hole. It's connected via Bluetooth to your phone, and that's what controls the app. But all of the processing, all of the signal control is actually done in the buds themselves, which is kind of cool. So that is coming here in the near future. It'll probably be out by, you know, Christmas time. And I thought it was really interesting. I don't really know the applications for me, but I think it's interesting to see all of the different wearable type technology things that are sort of evolved over the last couple of years. I would have never thought about something like this, and that's probably why I don't have $17 million in Series B funding.
That's interesting. I had not seen that way to pick one out of the world of the web that I had not seen. That comes as a complete and utter surprise to me.
Well, I know we've got some audiophiles that listen, and I don't know if they'll rejoice at the fact that they can EQ their life or if they will shudder at the thought of having everything run through a DSP.
Can you make it all sound like the dude that like does the movie trailer thing?
Well, you know, it's an equalizer, not a magic box.
In a world where I got an email.
Well, but you know, like you said, Jeff, you've gotta imagine a point where the technology is small enough to put into a device that size that could do, you know, real time, even if it's basic translation. And, you know, I would argue that maybe not for high level business negotiations, but for, you know, just trying to get your way around a country where you don't speak the language, as long as you had a system that could kick out a good enough translation or pick up on keywords, that would be amazing. I mean, I don't know. I have high hopes for where those types of technology are going. I'll be really curious to see what happens. But, you know, knowing how fickle people are, they'll get laughed out of existence because they, you know, nobody wears Google Glass anymore because you look like an idiot. Well, that might be the same thing where nobody wears here because you look like an idiot. And it might be a product that's 10 years ahead of its time. We'll see. Do you want to talk about Microsoft?
Yeah, actually, I want to talk about an interesting article. It was pervasive on my news feed on the talk about the Apple Watch sales are declining at a disastrous rate.
Oh, Apple might as well just close the doors.
And I wanted to talk about that because all the doom and gloom articles that you read, I found one article that said, hey, wait a minute. Is this really declining and disastrous and et cetera, et cetera? And I just wanted kind of to talk about some of the talking points of that because I really don't think that they are declining at disastrous rates. Just to be clear, Apple has not released any official sales numbers of the Apple Watch. Rumors are that they aren't even going to. They're going to lump it in another category.
Right. Well, and to be fair, all of these articles are all from one source too.
Yeah. And so that one source happens to be basically an app called Slice. And I don't know if we've talked about that on the show.
Is that the shipping tracking app?
It is. It actually is. So what one of the things that Slice has done is they're getting a lot of data about what people are getting shipped, right?
Yeah, because what the app does is when you have things coming to you, you can sign into it and it scans your email and it will tell you when products have shipped and when the delivery dates are and all of that good stuff, right?
Yeah, and it works great. I actually use it. I like it. It's a good app.
Okay.
You know, it scans and says, oh, you're going to get your box on Tuesday. And then voila, it's there on Tuesday. I mean, you can do that on your own, but it's a nice app. But that's basically all the source of this information happens to come from that app. And they've done a fairly good idea of estimating based on the numbers that they're seeing of orders coming through their system. And even based on just their estimates, that they're saying that it looks like in the first quarter of availability of the Apple Watch, estimates are that Apple will sell 5.5 million units.
That's a lot of units.
Hold on a second. 5.5 million units. Now, to put that in perspective, I think all of the Android Wear watches put together so far have sold about 800,000 units.
Yeah, I read an article that for all of 2014, Android Wear as a market, they had only sold like 720,000 units.
Yeah. So 5.5 million units in a quarter of the watch is crazy huge numbers, really.
Yeah, well, not compared to what they sell for iPhones.
Absolutely not, and that's true. But let's talk about that 5.5 million unit number just a little bit. Okay. First of all, Apple Watch is only available in like 5 markets.
Right. Yeah, it's what, like the US and Canada and China, I think, maybe.
Yeah.
And the UK. It's just a few places.
Yeah, it's just a few places. So it's not available in all the markets that the phone's available, right?
Okay, sure.
The first few weeks of availability, there was no availability. You were ordering it and you couldn't even buy it. And the most important thing, I think, that the article I found talks about, the steep decline that Slice was pointing out that there were on orders. Now, keep in mind, Slice is tracking online orders that are getting shipped to your home. Mm-hmm. It actually directly correlates with the exact same time that Apple made the product available in stores.
And, you know, why would you ship it if you have a store local? You would just go to the store. Instant yeah. gratification, right?
Exactly. I mean, look at, I had one on order. As soon as it became available in store, I went and said, I want one in store, canceled my online order, and just went and picked it up because I got it sooner.
Right. And you have that instant gratification itch that you need to scratch.
Absolutely. But I think just be careful what you're reading. I guess the biggest thing is, you know, like if you would have just glanced through news articles like I often do, like there were 6 articles talking about the same thing, all based on the same data. Mm-hmm. And 1 out of the 6 actually talked about the reality of what that data meant. Everyone else was just like, oh, it's a failure. That's horrible. They're not going to say. I mean, it kind of points out to the fact that take everything that you read with a grain of salt and just do a little digging onto what things are saying. Now, I'm not saying that the Apple Watch is going to sell as many as the iPhone. I don't think that's the case. Another interesting factor on the Apple Watch. So typically, this quarter of iPhone sales tends to be one of the lowest quarters out there. Okay. Because the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus are getting, you know, in Apple terms, long of tooth, right?
Sure, because we're coming up on a new model.
Yeah, the rumors are September, mid-September for a new model. They have sold 50 million phones this quarter.
Is this Apple's second quarter, or do you know what quarter they're in right now?
Technically, I think it would be the third quarter.
Because I was trying
to... They're on a weird, like, December, is December their Q1? It's something weird like that.
Yeah, I don't know, because I just found an article. So they sold 74.5 million iPhones in the first quarter, right, and they've sold 61 million in the second quarter of 2015. So this must be their second quarter. They must be going into third quarter when the new phone is released.
Right.
So 61 million phones.
Yeah, that's a lot of phones, man.
That is a lot of
phones.
And
they're saying that it's up over year, that the numbers are significantly up, and they're attributing that 100% to the Apple Watch.
Really?
Yeah.
So people are buying the phone in anticipation of later getting the watch?
Yeah, I mean,
the numbers don't bear out that they haven't sold 20 million Apple Watches against 70 million phones.
I think that the upturn, there are people that wanted the watch that maybe had an iPhone 4 or a 4S, and they wanted the watch and couldn't use it, so they had to buy the new phone.
Well, and to be fair, too, the larger size drew a lot of people back. There are a lot of people I know who said, if Apple made a bigger phone, I would go back to Apple. And Apple made a bigger phone, and they went back to Apple.
Really well that said that.
Yeah, you yourself. Right. And you're not the only person I know. I know more than one person, Jeff.
Really?
I know three people.
I know one portion.
But yes, there were quite a few people that did that. And, you know, they did go back when Apple introduced a bigger phone. So, yeah, that's not surprising that those numbers are up like that.
Just to get existential for a minute, Jacob, how many people do you really know? Really?
You know, more than one, less than 5. But yeah, I mean, I think that the larger phone definitely brought a lot of people back into the
iOS. I didn't want to get into a whole huge iPhone discussion. I just, the watch thing, I thought it was more interesting, not on how many watches they've sold, which I still am surprised they've sold that many. The biggest thing for me is, gosh, man, be careful at the stats that people throw out there, because goodness gracious, that was not, it was not realistic at all.
No. And, you know, it's interesting you say that you are surprised that they sold that many, because, you know, here's the thing. I have looked for Android watches in the wild and I have seen a couple, not very many at all. And not really looking for Apple watches in the wild. You know, I've seen probably a dozen of them and quite a few just in the building in which we work.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that, people are... Now, what I don't know, and you know, Jeff and I both have a coworker who bought one, and he has said, yeah, I'm kind of on the fence. It's just a watch. Like, I don't know if I'm going to keep it. Now, of those 5.5 million, I would not be shocked to hear some significant percentage are going to be returned, because I think that there are a lot of people who think that it's going to be more than it is who aren't necessarily satisfied with it, or they may be satisfied with it after the Apple Watch 2 software comes out and extends the ability for native apps and things like that. And so the real question is, do they hold on and wait for that to come out? Or do they even know that that's coming out? Or do they bail within their 30-day return period? And, you know, maybe those numbers aren't as rosy.
The last time I talked to that person you were talking about, he's going to keep it.
Okay. So, but I know people have said, seen people posting online that, you know, well, it's not all that I thought. I mean, it's $400 is a lot for a watch, and it is. And, you know, if it's just a watch, I guess I don't, you know, the luster kind of wore off for them. So, sure. You know, take it for what it is. I do think it's interesting, all of the Apple Watch bashing I have seen in the last week or so. And, I get it. Technology is a holy war. You love what you love and you hate what is not yours. But it does seem like people really like to pile on and trash the Apple Watch. And, you know, if it's not a product for you, it's not a product for you. That doesn't mean it's a bad product.
What's interesting to me is when the Moto 360 came out, and I still think it's a fairly attractive watch, minus the flat tire, it would be pretty much perfect.
Well, then you want that LG Urbane, I believe.
Right. But what was interesting is people, it looks more like a watch because it's round. And, you know, I've owned several, I guess three now, pretty fancy Swiss watches that are more expensive than what I should have spent on a watch. And all three of them have been rectangles.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the traditional watch for most people is a round device. That is, there's no getting around that.
I know. I like rectangles in the first place. So for me, the Apple Watch is a better fit. So,
well, that works for you. I'm glad that they designed it all around you.
Well, I just want to point out, me and Javi Ive, we have almost exactly the same taste. It's uncanny.
Yeah, you do. Okay, so to segue for a moment off of, you know, talking about, you know, Apple and Apple Watches and whatnot. So Microsoft just announced they are laying off almost 8,000 employees, almost all from Nokia, and they're getting ready to take a $7.6 billion write-down against the Nokia acquisition, which they only paid $7.2 billion for. So I don't even know from an accounting standpoint how that works, but they're writing $400 million off more than they paid for it in 2014, which, holy cow, I thought it was longer ago than just a year and change. But apparently the former CEO, Stephen Elop, he left, and there have been some other executives that have left. And Microsoft is apparently trying to shake things up. Satya Nadella, I guess, in a letter to the company wrote, we are moving from a strategy to grow a standalone phone business to a strategy to grow and create a vibrant Windows ecosystem, including our first-party device family. So I don't really know what that means, but...
So let me tell you what I think it means.
Okay.
I think it means they're not going to be making Windows phones anymore.
So are they just going to do apps for Android and iOS?
Yeah. Yeah, that's my take on that. I think that they are going to walk away from the phone business altogether and create excellent and useful apps for iOS and Android.
You know, I have not used it because I do not currently own an iPad, but I have heard that the office for the iPad is actually supposed to be really, really nice. And it was out and available before a touch-enabled version of Office for Surface was out. So I think that's really telling. Obviously, you know, Android and iOS have had time to mature in the market, and there are seasoned developers both inside and outside of Microsoft who are very familiar with those. So I wonder why they continue to throw so much after Windows. Now, not Windows, but Windows Phone, the mobile platform. But I will say this. I know 1, 2, 3, 4. I probably know 5 people, which that's pushing it for me. But I probably do know 5 people who use Windows Phone devices. And the one thing that they all share is that they are just foaming at the mouth, fanatic fans of Windows Phone. They love it. They have nothing negative to say about it other than we never get any of the apps, or if we do, it's 6 months later. So it definitely has its supporters. But I was doing some looking, and I was shocked at the market shares because I knew it was low, but I didn't realize how low it was. And if you look at Windows Phone share by region, it accounts for about 3.8% of mobile in the U.S., 8.5% in the U.K., which is pretty high, and it's just going gangbusters in Italy and France, where it's got between 13.1 and 13.6 of the market. But when you compare it globally against the other platforms, you know, Android is definitely king of the hill at 81.5% market share. iOS is down to under 15% at 14.8, and Windows is sitting there in third at 2.7. So, I mean, it's barely even a blip on the screen, and BlackBerry is somehow hanging on with 0.4% of global market share.
I cannot believe BlackBerry is still around.
How are they?
I don't know. You know, way back in the day, when Betamouse first started, I made a prediction that BlackBerry was short for this world.
they're the Radio Shack of the mobile OS.
Yeah.
How did Radio Shack last as long as it did? But it did somehow.
Well, Radio Shack still exists. I mean, we still have Radio Shack in our
kind of
burg of a world.
I feel like when you close,
kind of, but you know what? I bought my dad an Apple wireless keyboard for his Mac Mini there for $35. They had it 50% off.
Yeah, because that's a sign of a company that's going gangbusters. Well, Everything must go, folks. Clearing out.
I was happy about it because I got a wireless keyboard for $35.
I feel like you can't really say that you are still around when you close 9 out of 10 stores. I'm just saying.
That's true.
I don't know. I don't know how BlackBerry hangs on. But
just kind of like you can't say you're in the phone market when you fire 99.9% of all the employees related to making phones.
You know, and I was trying to look to see if I could find out what percentage that is. And I mean, it is a large percentage. I couldn't find a, you know, 7,800 jobs out of X total number of jobs, but it's probably not much more.
Well, they had already cut 18,000 jobs in the previous 12 months, including...
But that was all across the board.
The previous CEO of Nokia.
That's true. And
the head of the phones division, Joe Harlow, gone.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, I think the writing's on the wall there. And quite honestly, I mean, should Microsoft try to stay in the game if they're only pulling in 2.7% market share? Because they got to be throwing a lot of money at that. And
oh,
could
sure.
that money be better spent in areas where they're not struggling?
Well, and, you know, I mean, I think the world at large has spoken, and it likes Android. And Google has shown that you can have amazing apps that aren't super deeply integrated on iOS. So, you know, it kind of makes sense to say, why wouldn't Microsoft throw itself behind Android and iOS? Although if they own Nokia and they own all of that IP, and, you know, let's face it, Nokia was the 800-pound gorilla of mobile for, gosh, what, 2-3 decades? You know, why is Microsoft not making a, you know, Microsoft flavored Android to run on Nokia hardware? Because Nokia makes good hardware. I mean, I don't know that anybody has ever said that it's not anything but top shelf, you know, design and engineering. I don't know. I don't know how they hang on. And it's terrible that, you know, 8,000 people have to lose their jobs, especially coming on the heels last year of, what'd you say? It's 18,000. I knew it was tens of thousands. I didn't know it was that high.
I think it was 18,000.
Yeah. I thought it was a little less, but still I knew it was north of 10,000, and that's a lot of people.
Yeah, right in the show notes, new job cuts follow 18,000 over the past 12 months.
I can't read. It's my own notes and I can't
read.
That's
your own note, sir.
I didn't say I was a smart man.
You think like Samsung should hire some of those Nokia engineers? Cause
I'm assuming that the most of them will probably not have a problem jumping on board at, you know, at a Samsung or a HTC, LG. Maybe LG.
HTC is hanging on by a thread, man.
They make some darn.
They had
nice
another loss,
too.
A lost quarter.
Have they had any profitable quarter other than one?
They had one that I know of. They're hanging on by a thread. The rumors were that Huawei was going to buy them.
Oh, it was going to buy HTC?
Yeah, that was the rumor that I read.
And it's interesting. So they were profitable in Q1 of 2015. They made $11 million on $1.3 billion in revenue. That is nothing.
That's not great, yeah.
Poor HTC. And, you know, I mean, I think you can argue that at least up until fairly recently in the Android world, HTC was probably king of the hill when it came to build quality and fit and finish. Now, I will say Samsung has certainly caught up. The Galaxy S6 is an amazing piece of hardware. Sure. And LG's making really nice hardware. So, yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if that consolidation continues and we just are left with one or two, Android companies against Apple and then a whole bunch of little side players. And one company I have not kept track of at all is that Oppo and their OnePlus One. Are they still out there teasing people with that piece of sexy hardware that could potentially be yours for $350?
I think there's a OnePlus One 2 coming soon.
Oh, wow, very cool. We'll have to do some research on that and let all of our Android listeners know.
Yeah.
Because we don't really talk about Android enough, I feel like.
I feel like if we could get some of that internet money.
talk more about Android.
That we would buy some of those phones and talk about them and then give them away.
So that lets us segue perfectly into the fact that, hey, you can now do the public beta for iOS. Yeah. Android, iOS. So today, as of July 9th, you can sign up, and I will put a link out there on our website, but I'm sure it's all over the internet if you are at all interested, and you can go to beta.apple.com to get information on how to sign up. But you can sign up to have the cutting, bleeding edge beta on your phone. And that probably sounds like a better idea than it is, because the betas are notorious for being buggy and terrible on battery life. I put a iOS 7 beta on my iPhone 4S a couple of years ago, and oh God, it was awful. Like apps wouldn't work, and apps that did work would work randomly after, and the battery life was, you know, like measured in minutes. It was rough. Yeah, I'm hoping by the time it gets to public beta it's a little better, because I put a developer beta on, but
I think, you know, with a public beta, unless you have like me, let's say you had an iPhone and an iPad.
Put it on the iPad, maybe.
Put it on the iPad and check it out, maybe. But I kind of feel like if you only have one iOS device and that's your primary daily driver device, you might want to stay clear of that. Yeah. And actually, the same is true of El Capitan. The beta also became available today for Mac OS X.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But again, if you only have one Mac and that's your main driving machine, I would not recommend it, because beta is just that, a beta. They're using you to test their system for them and tell them the problems that you have. And yeah, I don't think you want to do that with your main device.
You know, I will say the upgrade to Yosemite was rough from Mavericks. Even after the beta period, I did not beta Yosemite at all, but it was pretty awful that first actual public release. But the fact that El Capitan is supposed to stabilize and improve that experience, maybe that beta won't be so bad.
I
will let you try. Yeah, I'm not going to sign up for that.
Let us know if any of you guys do either of those betas. Give us a call and let us know what you think. And maybe we'll even have you come on the show if you're interested and talk about it, because I am pretty sure that neither Jacob or I in the IT world that we're in are going to jump right into that beta program, because... Yeah.
Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. Hey, guess what, Jeff? We have a guest for our show today. We have got Thomas Keister, And this is an odd one. He is with the American Marijuana Party. Yes, that is a thing.
I think that's most excellent, Jacob.
It is most excellent. He is running for already. I mean, you people are going to be sick in hearing about politics by 2016, but he is running for the position of president in the 2016 election as the American Marijuana Party candidate. And he has got some interesting things to say about marijuana, about personal responsibility. It really is kind of a libertarian platform with a lot more weed. So we had a really interesting conversation with him. He was calling in over the phone, so the quality is not going to be quite where it is sometimes with Jeff and I and our dulcet voices. But we're gonna play that for you guys and check it out. So I hope you enjoy it. So here is Thomas Keister. Hi, Thomas. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Can you hear me?
Yep. You're just fine.
Good. I'm Jacob, and I've got my co-host Jeff with me.
I cannot hear Thomas.
Oh, you can't? Hang on. Let me see. Hang on. I'm having a little bit of technical difficulty here.
No problem. I hosted a podcast for 6 years. I don't know how it goes.
Can you hear him now, Jeff?
I can hear him now. Can he hear me?
Yep.
All right.
Hi, Thomas.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on. And I just wanted to clear it up so that we say your name right. I wasn't sure. Is it Keister or Keister?
It's Keister, just like falling on your...
Okay, well, I thought it probably was, but I didn't want to say it and then have you say, well, it's not, it's Keister, and how, like, you know, like Frankenstein instead of Frankenstein?
No Igor problems.
All right. All right. Well, yeah, we wanted to just have you on for a little bit. I saw that you are running as the 2016 presidential candidate for the American Marijuana Party, and with RFRA and the First Church of Cannabis being such hot topics, I thought it would be interesting to talk a little bit about it and looking at some of your party platforms, just ask some questions, because it looks like a very libertarian ideology with some more weed focus on it. And I just wanted to learn a little bit, and I thought it would be very topical and timely.
Okay. The platform itself, it's basically an amalgamation of the Libertarian Party platform. The legalization platform is in a lot of respects from the U.S. Marijuana Party's platform, as well as the Kentucky Marijuana Party. And then, with my own, you know, input and additions thrown in the mix there as needed.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about what the American Marijuana Party is. I mean, like, what's your platform and why pick marijuana as one of your key pieces on the platform?
Well, the whole reason this really came about was I've been a longtime official down here in Southern Indiana with the Libertarian Party.
Okay.
And I was interested in doing some advocacy work towards marijuana legalization. But at the same time, I kind of wanted to separate that aspect of my political work from the Libertarian Party, because a lot of the times that's one of the automatic potholes we face down here is, well, you guys are libertarians, all you want's weed.
Sure.
No, it's slightly more complicated than that. Because I'm actually running a town council campaign down here as well. And I actually, there was actually a little bit of panic when I announced my town council bid. Like, oh my God, this crazy libertarian pothead wants to run the town council now. And I had to tell everybody, it's like, no. I don't plan on including marijuana in my town council race. It's not an issue that the town of Clarksville is really confronted.
Mm-hmm.
And if down the road there's some research or some polling that shows the community leaning in that direction, you know, I'll be happy to revisit it as an individual or with the Libertarian Party. But if it's not an issue, it's not something we're going to make an issue necessarily.
Okay. So I guess my question is, based on that, how does running under that banner as opposed to working with like the libertarians, I mean, How does that work in a state like Indiana, where, you know, outside of the major metropolitan areas, the state's incredibly conservative? And the example I thought of is, like, my mother can understand and respect the typical libertarian position, you know, small government, personal responsibility. She's okay with that. But if you start talking about marijuana, she's going to immediately go, oh, well, you're a hippie. You're not serious. This is just a joke. And I'm curious how you overcome that, because I think a lot of the state outside of, you know, the college towns and the bigger cities might have that kind of a view, that it kind of immediately puts you at a little bit of a disadvantage trying to get your message out there.
Yeah, and that is a good question. Oddly enough, and it's been a really pleasant surprise with some of the media attention and some of the interviews that I've been doing, that despite the fact that the word marijuana is right up there on the marquee in the party name, I really haven't been treated like a crackpot or, you know, somebody who's more interested in playing, you know, disc golf on the White House lawn than running foreign policy. And I think a lot of the reason for that is, when I bring up what I'm trying to do with the legalization platform, is I'm using the mainstream candidates, I'm kind of using their momentum against them.
Okay.
Because, you know, just in the last couple of weeks alone, we've seen Governor Chris Christie enter the race.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to find out what his proposals would be, because he's, you know, like all the other candidates, I want to rebuild the economy, I want to get America working again. That's great, except for the fact that his state is falling apart around his ankles. Then you have Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin, who just entered the race. He's strong on rebuilding the economy, which would be great if Wisconsin wasn't 38th in the country in job growth.
Well, I mean, Walker is not popular.
He's barely popular enough to stay governor in Wisconsin, so that should give you an idea.
Right.
But, I mean, if you take 38th place and multiply that by 50, you just have more mediocrity spread out over a greater distance.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I think a lot of the legalization platform can come into use. And I think it's interesting that you mentioned Indiana being a very conservative state, because one of the talking points I've had out in the last couple of weeks is for the concerns that, you know, it's going to be all the liberal states, the blue states that go towards this. My go-to example is Topeka, Kansas.
Don't know smack much about dab, Topeka.
You would love this. Smack dab in the middle of, I'm not sure you'd call that the Bible Belt, would you? Or
I would consider that. Sure.
Yeah, I would say so.
So Topeka, Kansas, right in the middle of the Bible Belt, in the middle of one of the redder states in the country, and they have a legalization measure. It is legal to possess and smoke marijuana in Bob Dole country.
Huh.
If that's not a sign that the tides are shifting, I'm not sure what is.
And that's a ballot initiative, or that has passed?
That has passed.
Wow. Okay, I would not have guessed. If you would have asked me to pick, like, the most recent place that had some sort of a decriminalization, I would never have picked Topeka, Kansas.
And one of the examples I use to tie in with that is that there was the controversy here recently when Washington, D.C. Attempted a decriminalization measure.
Mm-hmm.
There was tons of controversy. The U.S. Congress, of course, said, no, you can't have it, because obviously they can still tell the District of Columbia what to do by withholding funding and
right. Other
little procedural tricks here and there. And the main reason that there was all this controversy was, quite simply, they did not put a revenue stream into their initiative. You could possess it, you could smoke it, you could give it away to people, but there was nothing about selling or taxing. And that was the fatal flaw in that, because if we haven't figured this out by this point in American politics, unless they can get a piece of the action, even if they don't like it, if they can get a piece of the action, they might be willing to look the other way.
Sure.
I was going to say, isn't that one way to get a conservative base like Indiana interested, by showing, look at what Colorado's tax revenues have been on marijuana? I mean, I would assume that Republicans would love some tax dollars on a sin tax, right?
Absolutely. The numbers actually just came out for the first year of legalization in Washington State. And while I think Colorado brought in something like 106 or 7 million, I'm wanting to say, the first year in Washington State, they brought in about $84 million.
Wow.
And I would like to see all the Republican challengers and all the Democratic challengers look the American voters in the eye and explain to them why their state shouldn't be getting $7 million a month on their own accord.
Sure.
This is money like Colorado, we've seen with Colorado. Their tax revenue is being reinvested into the state via education.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting it in infrastructure projects. And despite all the positives, we haven't seen all this 30, 40-year-old just-say-no rhetoric come true. Public use has not increased. The crime rate has decreased. And tax revenue is coming in. It seems to me like a pretty ideal situation all the way around.
Yeah, I actually just read a statistic today doing some research for this that surprised me. But there are estimates that about 16,000 jobs have been created in Colorado related to somehow the marijuana industry, which that's definitely nothing to sneeze at. That's a lot of jobs on top of the tax revenue and everything else.
And on top of all that, there is a huge commercial real estate boom going on, obviously, in the Denver area as they're acquiring properties to create dispensaries and growing space and warehousing and everything.
There's still some pretty significant hurdles, what with the banking regulations and whatnot, right? I mean, they're having problems with finding banks that to do business and all of those things. I mean, so there until it's a federal policy, it's going to be rough on the states, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of the great ironies of life at the moment. They can't do anything about shutting off ISIS's cash flow, but they can stop legitimate business in this country from opening a savings account. that's a victory for democracy right there.
Has there been any movement at the federal level at this point to institute a federal tax and legalize it federally?
Not that I'm aware of, and you know, we keep our ears pretty close to the ground on that subject. And I'm really not sure that, I mean, we're not going to get it out of our current president. This is a guy who thought a $500 million website was a great idea, and then the website didn't work. And Hillary Clinton, she might be the Democratic frontrunner at the moment, but she's so disingenuous when it comes to how she changes her stances on issues. I was just discussing this with somebody the other day, the whole Confederate flag controversy that's been going on the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's Hillary Clinton out there out front saying we need to take this flag down and we need to do this with it and everything. But at the same time, everybody conveniently forgets that for the 8 years she was first lady of the state of Arkansas, her and her husband helped celebrate Confederate Flag Day, which is a state holiday in Arkansas, every year for the 8 years they were in the governor's mansion.
Well, and nobody brings those things up at the federal level. You got to go where the wind is blowing, right?
Because that's one of the funny things to me is especially the sudden surgence of Bernie Sanders in the race. And a lot of people had written him off from the word go. But as I like to remind people, a month after his launch, the only thing they have dug up on Bernie Sanders is he wrote a dirty story while he was in college.
Yeah,
and he should be thanking his lucky stars this happened in the 70s. If this happened in the 80s, the big scandal would be he rented a porno from Blockbuster and didn't rewind it before he returned it.
Yeah, and if it would happen now, there'd be, you know, tweets and Instagram pictures of it.
I've done Anthony Weiner flashback.
That'll kill your chances. So how does, a small independent group And I don't know how big the American Marijuana Party is, but I feel like they're not huge. Mount a national campaign. I mean, it's certainly one thing to affect change locally, but how does a small group really, you know, crack into any kind of national presence?
This is where I think that social media has really become the game changer on the political landscape. Because, you know, 20 years ago, you pretty much had to be Ross Perot or Donald Trump. You had to be willing to put your own money on the table and hope for the best and try and make some kind of altruistic statement like, I'm not going to raise any money. I'm not going to spend anybody else's. I've got the money to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great if you've got the 8-9 digits to throw out on advertising and outreach and campaign signs and bumper stickers and all this. But in social media landscape, you can reach an incredible amount of people effectively for really nothing. That's one of the things that we've really been surprised with this campaign, is how the social media aspect has really generated a lot of publicity for us. When we started the campaign, I had maybe 6,000 people following me on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started cranking down on the Twitter page and just, you know, working it like a plow horse. And at the moment, we're approaching 33,000. So that's,
wow, you know,
26,000 people in about like 4 or 5 months. It's a minute number when compared to the rest of the campaigns that are out there. But we've spent exactly $0.00 to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been managed to be mentioned in the New York Times. We've been mentioned on MSNBC. We did national radio a couple weeks ago on KABC in Los Angeles. And we've gotten, you know, interview requests from newspapers, podcasts like yours, and other sources. And primarily where that came from was when we were mentioned in the New York Times. The whole gist of the mention of me was that I had more Twitter followers than Lincoln Chafee.
Okay.
That's interesting.
And it was kind of funny that it got the snowball rolling. And I'm like, I'm getting more publicity for having more Twitter followers than the governor of Rhode Island is getting for running on his metric platform.
Right. Which I got to admit, I'm behind that. I think that we should go metric. You know, let's become one of the three remaining countries that's still on imperial to get off of it. But that's a different argument for a different day.
Somebody asked me about that a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, I'm a pothead. Of course I'm for the metric system.
More precise measurement.
You know what? And that was, I was thinking, so the nerd in me, I was thinking, well, of course, because everything is just, it's in multiples of 10, not that you probably buy and sell marijuana by the gram. I am not a pothead. It didn't even dawn on me. I'm a big nerd. Well, that just threw me completely off of track.
So what are your thoughts on the lawsuit that the First Church of Cannabis filed? Here in Indiana,
Bill Levin approached this in the most intelligent way possible. Because I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have just seen the story and kind of like, oh, that's amusing, and went on. But you know, he's not first and foremost a pothead, and he's not first and foremost a religious guy, and he'll be the first one to tell you that on both accounts. I mean, he runs an advertising and marketing agency.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not just sitting at a desk all day going, Dave's not here, man. So, I mean, he's running a business. So when this whole issue got started, he took a look at it and he went, well, if we tried to do what we would like to do, despite the fact that Governor Pence signed this law, and technically, theoretically, if you look at it this way, we should be able to get away with it. He noticed that at the same time, if they attempted that, they was all going to get arrested, which automatically puts them on the defensive because they're dealing in the criminal court system in Indiana,
mm-hmm.
which is why he backed off from having cannabis at the service, and he decided to pursue this through the civil court level where the argument's on a level playing field, and now the state has to show what their compelling interest is in blocking the activities of the church.
Yeah, it seems like he is either a very intelligent person, and I do not know him myself, or he has got some pretty good legal guidance from some of the articles I have read that have analyzed some of the steps that they have taken. So, I'm very interested, and maybe you've got some thoughts on this. Obviously, what they're trying to do by using RFRA to, say that using marijuana is part of their religious process is probably not in the spirit of the law, even if it's in the letter of the law. So do you see the legislature here in the state taking action to try and specifically block the spirit of the law and shut them down? Or is this a legitimate case that that makes it all the way through the court system?
Well, really, the way the state legislature operates, I would be flat astonished if they got something done in the next legislative term. That's one of the things that kind of struck me when I first moved to Indiana 15 years ago was, the state legislature only meets 30 days during even-numbered years and 61 days during odd-numbered years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even for a part-time legislature, that's a pretty cake job working 90 days in 2 years and getting paid $24,000 a year for it.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm looking at the situation as I've seen it unfold. I'm not sure that even the General Assembly quite knows how to proceed, because they came out with the original version of RFRA, and boy, did it hit the fan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was...
And it's like, well, so let me get this straight. Angie's List is talking about leaving. The NFL's mad at you. The NBA's mad at you. Everybody's lining up. Where is your God now?
It's on the almighty dollar.
You know that. And it's been funny to me, because when they had to backpedal and everything, I'm like, so, wow, let's see. I mean, this has been a bad summer for Mike Pence. He got egg all over his face with RFRA. Not only did he not get what he wanted, he opened the door for a cannabis church to establish itself in Indiana. And then, like, a couple months later, the Supreme Court legalizes gay marriage.
Yeah, you got to wonder if he has any chance at all. Do you even think he seeks re-election? Because he's going to face a primary challenge.
Yeah, I mean, he's the kind of guy, he's not going to settle for just one term. He's going to come out and, try to run a strong incumbency. But really, I think that the key conservative element in Indiana is going to look at the damage that this had, the potential damage this had to the state economically. And at the end of the day, they're going to look at Governor Pence and go, is two people not willing to sell a wedding cake to a gay couple worth all of this?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've said a couple of times now, if they can show me in the Bible where Jesus died so bakers couldn't sell wedding cakes to gay couples, I will shut up about weed and go home.
Yeah. You're not going to find that, by the way.
All the fundamentalists haven't found that yet.
I don't think Jesus talked about wedding cakes. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I think the Bible would be a lot more popular if he did.
And it was the most ludicrous argument I've had in years about a month ago. I was arguing with a fundamentalist over the whole gay marriage debate, and he accused me of using an outdated Bible verse.
Can you define what that is?
I had to ask him. It's like, I understand that you're an ordained minister, and I'm an ordained minister as well. I went to a Lutheran grade school for 8 years. So I'm pretty familiar with the Bible, both ends. And it's a 2,000-year-old book. Everything in that book is outdated. If it wasn't, we'd still have people talking to burning bushes right now.
Yeah.
And it's crazy the level of... What word to use here? The gravitas that people put when they're trying to use the Bible to legislate morality. And you know, it's easy to go find the little verses like from Leviticus and nitpick with them and go, well, yeah, okay, you don't think gay people should be married, but at the same time, you shouldn't be eating pork, eating shrimp, getting haircuts, wearing clothes made out of two different fabrics, or working on Sundays.
Yeah.
But that's... if we all still did that, granted, we'd probably be Pakistan, but we decided we didn't want to be Pakistan. We wanted to go into the double-digit centuries and beyond. So we kind of started letting go of some of the certain aspects in that book. One of these days, they're going to figure out that if you want modern times to be like biblical times, you're 2,000 years too late for it. Everything has to, at some point, be, you know, living and breathing and flexible enough to adapt at the evolution. And evolution doesn't apply to just people. It applies to principles and ideals as well.
Right. So what do you think the implications are? I would totally be for legalization of marijuana. I don't have an issue with that. I do kind of have an issue with protecting marijuana as a religious freedom in RFRA. What are the implications, do you think, you know, if that becomes a religious freedom and they do end up saying, yep, you know, that smoking weed is a, you know, religious freedom that you're protected under this law, where do we stop on what's protected? I mean, what law isn't protected? I mean,
well, no.
Child pornography? I mean, the First Church of Child Pornography. I mean, is that protected then?
Well, no, I would have to say no, because there's a world of difference between using free will to light something other than tobacco on fire and inhale it, as opposed to, you know, physically or mentally damaging children. There's a clear delineation there that they will see.
Okay, but what about, like, cocaine
or heroin or anything else? I mean,
it does become a slippery slope, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, pretty much anything is going to become a slippery slope, especially if you try to apply religion to it.
Yeah. The First Church of Assisted Suicide.
It's a small
congregation.
You know, that's terrible, but honest to God, having seen people who have gone through horrible end of life situations, that should be probably something that we have, you know, being serious for a second. But so I guess my question is, why jump at to the national level and not try and affect more change at the local level if there is such turmoil, you know, even right here in Indiana with, you know, politicians really stepping in it? Why run for the presidency as opposed to state legislature or the governor or, you know, even just mayor or something like that and try and affect change, you know, locally up and out? Is there a method to the madness of going top down?
There's a little bit, because I believe this is the reason why not only acceptance of the idea has progressed as it has. I mean, 5 years ago, still illegal everywhere. Mm-hmm. Now you've got four states, you've got several cities that have adopted decriminalization or legalization measures. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think Delaware just decriminalized a couple of weeks ago. And it's the fact that I think the individual states are finally getting sick of the massive, long-running gridlock on Capitol Hill. They can't get a budget passed. They can't get anything figured out without having to worry about if they have a supermajority or whether or not they can get enough votes from the other side of the aisle and all this other nonsense. I remember, it was about 25 years ago, I remember when 51 votes out of 100 was good enough to get something done. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden it's 60. And I think it's all these little tricks and procedural shenanigans. Nothing's getting done to the point where the states are going, we have to do this ourselves. And at some point I think the federal government is going to have to wake up and realize that this is a positive on both sides of the argument, because you have states like Washington and Colorado now that are pulling in tens and hundreds, or tens and into the hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue that they're putting to use in that state, and that's money that they're not asking the federal government to print out for them real quick. I mean, if we're $17 trillion in debt, and you have states incubating ideas like this that can bring in tax revenue to replace grant money and other forms of government assistance, then the federal government should be sitting back laughing all the way to the bank going, this is great. This is money that we're not adding on to our deficit. You know, because we look at the economic situation in this country right now. I mean, it was bad enough during the Bush administration. Then the Obama administration comes along and doubles down on the economic damage that the Bush administration did.
Yeah.
I think the most fascinating trivia fact that President Obama himself has added more money to our federal deficit than all of the presidents before him combined.
Yeah, and that definitely seems to be sort of the way that Washington is going, regardless of which party is in charge. You know, what do you say to the critics who say, you know, you have a snowball's chance at, you know, even getting any significant national exposure, let alone any serious bid to the White House? I mean, what do you consider a win in your mind that's short of, you know, winning the presidency? Which, you know, not to say you can't, because there's always a possibility, but the odds are unlikely for any third party or small party to take over because of the Democratic and the Republican machines that are in place that control everything.
I mentioned this in an interview just the other night. I think I do have a chance at winning. It would be like the movie King Ralph. I'd have to expect all the other candidates to get electrocuted all at once, and I might have a shot. To the snowball crowd, I would tell them Donald Trump has equally a snowball's chance as I do, as I see it. They can't stop talking about Donald Trump.
No, that's true. That is true.
He is the slowest unfolding train wreck I've ever seen, and you just can't look away sometimes.
He's kind of the American equivalent to Rob Ford, I think.
Okay, way. I don't like Donald Trump, but that's just to Donald Trump. He's no Rob Ford.
So that's very interesting. I mean, like, what are your next steps? Like, how do people, if they want to support you or find out more about your platform, what's the best way for people to follow you on Twitter, get a hold of you? How can they reach out and become involved?
They can find me on Twitter at Thomas Keister. It's first name Thomas and last name. I always have to go to the anatomically correct spelling. It's K-E-I-S-T-E-R. Our website's up and running. It's American Marijuana Party .weebly.com. And they can contact us through the website, or we would prefer them to contact us through the website. We do have an email up on the Twitter account that obviously you guys found me through for the interview.
Yep.
And, at the end of the campaign, win, lose, or draw, I think it's important that, one, we're not really saying much of anything that's really new on the pro-legalization side of the argument. I mean, we're getting some new facts and figures in that are bolstering our arguments. But at the same time, I think it's important that we have a candidate who is, one, willing to put himself out there and say, yes, I inhaled. It's not 1992 on MTV anymore. I inhaled. I will put out video of me smoking if that's what y'all want. But what we need is a candidate who is running on not so much a marijuana-centric platform, but a platform with marijuana as a key component, and then to have actual other policies in there. Because when we got started on this, the most important thing to us was that the fact that the word marijuana is in the party name and the fact that marijuana is a leading proponent of our platform, we didn't want that one single issue to define what we were trying to do.
Okay.
Because what we would like to have people out there start realizing that, oh, okay, this guy's a pothead, granted, but he understands and is concerned about things like education and foreign policy and the environment and our crumbling infrastructure. It's possible to be a pothead and be politically motivated and politically active and not have those two ideals mutually exclusive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, I'm on your side. I feel like anything that doesn't harm other people should be completely within your purview if that's something that you want to do. But I'm also in favor of, you know, being aware of what's going on in the world. So it's, you know, the two are not mutually exclusive.
And then that's a great point, too, because legalization in another aspect would calm a lot of our problems in the American Southwest down. I'm willing to bet if it was legal in California, Arizona, and the border states, you wouldn't have as much of a tendency for people to be winging severed heads into our country.
People are terrible. They would find another reason to throw severed heads. I think the bottom line is people just like to throw severed heads around. So I guess my last question I've got, and I'm curious, if you had to call it, when are we completely decriminalized? 50 states, federally, when is it, just everybody gets around and passes a peace pipe? How many years?
With the amount of progression that we've seen in just the last 3 or 4 years, I would be bold enough to say within 25 years, It will either be legal on a federal level or all 50 states will have just made a moot point of it by that time.
We really appreciate coming on and sharing, Thomas. I just get your message out there a little bit. I think it's interesting, and I wish you all the best luck.
I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to come on your show.
Yeah, thank you.
I thought it was a great discussion.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I mean, Jeff and I are both definitely libertarians. I neither one of us use marijuana, but I think a lot of the ideals line up with that libertarian bent. I think a lot of our listeners are that way. And while I don't use it, I think it's ludicrous that it's criminalized. So, you know, I look forward to a day when it's not and people can make decisions on their own.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. You have a great evening.
You too. You and Jeff both. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, Jeff. That was an interesting interview. I don't know I agree 100% with everything that he had to say, but, that it is what it is. I agree with a lot of the things that he said. I
think the main topic, I probably agree with him more than some of his other things that I saw on the website. I mean, I think the legalization of marijuana is an inevitability and the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
Because I personally believe that the hypocrisy of, what you can and can't do with your own personal self, marijuana should be something that if you choose to do that, then that should be something that you can do. People will argue, oh, well, what about, the influence and, causing wrecks and accidents? Well, those things should be illegal because you're doing something you shouldn't be doing under the influence, not because the influence of itself should be illegal. So anyway,
that's true. And
interesting stuff.
And I actually had found some information that traffic fatalities in Colorado are actually down since they decriminalized marijuana. So I take that for what it is, but it hasn't gone the other direction. And a question that I didn't get a chance to ask him, I forgot, and I'll put it to you. But if tomorrow marijuana was decriminalized, are you going to go out and start smoking pot? Because I wouldn't. Like I have tried it. I full disclosure, I have smoked the wacky tobacco before. I've done it a couple times, and it's not for me. I don't enjoy it. I don't really get anything out of it. So I feel like a lot of people would probably try it because it would be novel or new, or they've never done it. And then they'd be like, that's a thing. I just don't see hordes and hordes of people all of a sudden, if they don't already, start smoking marijuana. I wouldn't.
No, I don't. I mean, I definitely wouldn't. I don't drink. I mean, not for any reason other than I don't want to spend the money. And I don't in this part of my life like feeling that way. And I
don't think that marijuana is going to be anything that I'm interested in doing. But that being said,
you mean you don't want to add a bunch of depressants to yourself?
I think I don't need any more depressants in my life is what I'm trying to say. I've got enough all on my very own.
But yeah, no, I can't imagine that it's going to ruin the moral fabric of the world and cause millions of people to become druggies and start shooting horse and the next. Although we on this podcast have been advocating for our listeners to start heroin, apparently. I just don't see it happening. But, you know, yeah. I think it is it's inevitability sooner rather than later. And, you know, hey, tax it, regulate it, make it safer. Because right now, if you're buying from the guy down the street, do you know what you're buying? I guarantee you that if you're buying it from Camel, you know, it's going to be regulated and you're going to get exactly what it says on the package.
Yeah,
that's got to be a good thing, right?
I think so.
Okay, well, you know, we didn't thank them individually at the beginning of the podcast, but we said we would, and so I want to make sure that we thank our Patreons. So thank you, Dennis Heinley, Jamie Brown, Kai Layton, and Todd Singer. You guys rock. You're awesome, and you are amazing people. We really appreciate all of the help that you have given the show and the support that you have shown. So I want to make sure we thank you. We need to talk about what we love, Jeff. Okay. Why don't you tell me what you love?
Okay, so what I love is the I purchased on Amazon the Hoco stainless steel bracelet for the Apple Watch, and it's a pretty nice watch band. It's stainless steel. It came with the little adapters to hook it into my 42 millimeter Apple Watch, and I just got it today actually, and it looks pretty spiffy. I'm impressed, you know, for $35, compared to the Apple version at $550. I wouldn't say that it's as nice as the Apple version, but by golly, it's not 15 times less as nice. I feel like it's just about the, you know, I would say it's nicer than $35, quite honestly. Now, again, I've only had it one day. So, you know, as I think we were joking about in front of the show, unless it turns my arm green or something and it's not really stainless steel, but it seems to be really nice stainless steel. The clasp mechanism works really well. It came with a little tool to take some links out of the bracelet to make it fit better. And I took advantage of that tool. And I really enjoy it. So I can recommend that if you're looking for a little fancier bracelet to use with your Apple Watch and you don't want to spend $550 on a Link stainless steel bracelet, go take a look at the Hoco stainless steel bracelet. I will put the link in the show notes. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I have to admit, seeing it even just over the webcam, it does look pretty nice. I am a little bit jealous. I
plan on bringing it in and letting you see it, as opposed to some people who have watch bands that they won't bring in and let their friends see. I will let you see this one.
So apparently this is just turning into the what we love about the Apple Watch segment now, huh? Yeah, it does look really nice. I am actually curious to touch it and feel it and, you know, call it George. That's very cool.
So what do you love this week, Jacob?
So I love a thing, and it's not an Apple Watch thing, surprisingly. It's not even really a tangible thing, but what it is I saw today a link to a company called El Ranchito Imagine Digital. And what they do is they do visual effects, and they put out a demo reel. They were one of the digital image companies that put together and composited the Game of Thrones battle at Hardhome, that huge White Walkers versus the Night's Watch fight battle. I think it was the second to last episode of the Game of Thrones this last season. And I love these because what they do is they show you the shots out of the camera, and you see like the giant curtains hanging up, and the fact that like over behind the green curtains, it's just like a parking lot, and there's some like RVs, and you know, then it's like a Walmart behind the parking lot. And then they show, like, they sweep across, like, okay, we've composited out this, and now we've added in mountains, and now we've put snow. And then like all of a sudden it is this real place where you know, tens of thousands of White Walkers and the Wraiths are all attacking the Night's Watch. And you see how they composite it together, and then you see the finished thing, and your brain, still knowing that, goes, nope, it's real. And the fact of the matter is, nothing is real anymore. Nothing at all. I mean, it is amazing that we can, you know, make these things. And you know, there are lots of VFX demos out there to watch. And so I will put a link specifically to this one in the show notes. It's out on Vimeo, and it is just as amazing. It's about 6 minutes long, and it is just sheer eye candy. And, you know, you think, oh, well, they must have done all this together in one shot. Nope. Almost nothing is one shot. It's just all random stuff shot in a green screen and composited in. And the best part is, without giving too much away about the fight, there is a giant involved. And there's a scene where the giant is trudging his way through, you know, just piles of zombie things. And when you see the original uncomposited shot, it's just a skinny guy with a tennis ball on a long stick walking through a room. And then that becomes a giant. And it's funny. So funny. But I just love those demo reels. I could sit and watch them, you know, just back to back to back, and realize that, you know, everything we see, everything is manipulated and nuanced to the nth degree. So I highly recommend going and checking them out. They are really, really cool. If you are at all into movies, special effects, any of that stuff, It is some pretty cool stuff. I think we're at the end of the episode. Awesome. That's all I'm going to talk about anyway. So you have just listened to another fine episode of the No Better Than Average podcast. There wasn't even any weed involved, at least on our parts. If you have a question, a comment, a rant, you want to give us that song that just gets you in your head and you hate it, that you just can't stand, we would love to hear from you. You can call us at 317-643-1212. You can send us an email, feedback@nobettershow.com. You can get to us on the Twitters @nobettershow or our website, www.nobettershow.com. And you can leave a comment or submit even your song or your feedback there. We would love for you to participate and send us an email, get in touch with us, reach out somehow. We love that interaction. We listen to everything that we get. We read everything we get. If it's interesting and you want us to, we will put it on the air and make you internet famous. If you like the show, we would really appreciate it if you would tell your friends about us. And as always, if you would subscribe, rate, and leave a review on iTunes. We just got another review today, so thank you so much. That would really go a long way towards helping us out and continuing to grow our audience. A few kind words and a handful of stars really goes a long way. You can always buy a t-shirt. You got a couple of weeks left for that. Or throw us a buck or two or a Maserati on our Patreon page. That would be awesome. We will be back again next week. We will have more show. You have just listened to the No Better Than Average podcast, so now you should know better than average too. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good week.